Hey everybody, Chris Fafalius here. If you enjoy One Hit Thunder, which I'm assuming you do considering you're listening to it right now, I want to tell you about another great music podcast on the Evergreen Podcast Network. It's called Riffs on Riffs. On this season of Riffs on Riffs, hosts Toby Braswell and Joe Watson are breaking down one iconic pop song each week. Everything from Taylor Swift's Cruel Summer to Journey's Don't Stop Believin' to Naughty by Nature's OPP. Each week, they crack open the song, trace its history, decode those cryptic lyrics, and unearth the hidden gems in its musical DNA. Not only do they dive into the song's history, lyrics, and impact, they also go down some fun and oftentimes hilarious rabbit holes. So yeah, if you're a fan of One Hit Thunder, I think you'll also enjoy Riffs on Riffs. So go hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Hey, do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out WeKnowPodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, WeKnowPodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice. Weedus bassist Matthew Milligan makes his third appearance on the show this week. Instead of going the usual route of discussing an artist he loves, he changed it up by choosing a band that he was unsure about. The Vines were once considered the saviors of rock and roll by some publications, but in a strange turn of events, at least one of these outlets later apologized for delivering the crown so flippantly. Should we all have paid more attention to the Vines, or were we lucky to get free of them when we did? Stay tuned to find out.
Is all you need to make the money guaranteed, and you can live off royalties forever. And it makes me wonder, is it just a wonder, or is it One Hit Thunder?
All right, so today we are here to talk about the band that Rolling Stone called the saviors of rock and roll in 2002, and NME called the best band since Nirvana, but then later apologized for saying that. Yes, I'm talking about The Vines, a band who I know who they are once I started doing the research for this. I'm like, oh yeah, I know this song. Oh yeah, I know all these songs. But all these bands from this era that had the at the beginning of their name, and then their name ended in an S, and I just assumed that they were all the same band. Obviously, the Strokes pulled away. Obviously, I'm well-versed in the Strokes. But the Vines, I don't know, man. Were you a fan of the Vines? What made you pick the Vines today?
I wasn't a fan of the Vines.
Okay.
And actually, that's why I picked this one. Because this is my third episode of this show,
yeah,
which is I'm very excited about, by the
Three-timer.
Way.
Three-timer.
Both previous episodes, I picked songs that I really dug.
Yeah.
And this one, something that came out, I remember this coming out. I remember this whole movement, like you were just talking about, with the bands and the sort of like, everyone was running with this, like, the return of the rock.
Right.
Attitude towards everything. And it was the Strokes. The White Stripes got lumped into that.
Mm-hmm. The Hives,
exactly. And then the Vines. And as best I can tell, I think the Hives have kind of functioned under the radar a bit too, but I mean, of that four, these guys definitely came in last place in terms of legacy.
Right. And the thing about this style of music, which I would kind of define as sort of like grungy in a way, maybe it's a little bit reminiscent of, I don't know, music from the late 70s or something, the Kinks and bands like that, right? Is that what they were going for? But the thing about them, for me, just as a player of music, I don't know if you would necessarily agree, but I'm always looking for something in music where I'm like, damn, I could have never thought of that, or whoa, that's really hard to play. And maybe that's just like from a musician's perspective, but when I hear the Vines and the Hives and stuff, I'm like, oh, That sounds like something those guys wrote in 2 minutes. That's not to say it's not catchy or not good.
Yeah.
But that was my impression before I dug in a little bit more today.
So I was deep into the bands. Like, I was one of those dudes who was like, hell yes. Like, I was all into it. But I think, yeah, the Vines even back then were kind of like last place for me. Like, the Strokes had this really interesting, like, the way the vocals were on that first album is so unique. And like, the fact that their music video is just them playing live and you can tell that they don't give a shit about any of it. Like, there was something that was just inherently cool about the Strokes. White Stripes, it's like you've got that magic piece of like Jack White, who can play the simplest guitar riffs on some songs and then just fucking shred for like 5 straight minutes on like another song, like some of the coolest blues guitar stuff. And then the Hives, it was all about like watching them live. Like, I remember they would constantly be on MTV stuff and they just had that like, anytime it's a band from Sweden, those dudes know how to put on a show. I don't know how to explain it otherwise. But then we get to the Vines, and they're this Australian band who really is like trying to be Nirvana. Like, there's so much of like Kurt Cobain singing style that he's trying to put on. But like, I'm not sure if either of you watched the David Letterman performance of Get Free, but like,
oh yeah.
They were so belligerent and like out of their fucking minds out the gate that it was like, I think everyone very quickly was like, oh, we're not going to back this horse. Like, that's like a career ending television performance.
It's amazing because when you watch it, I watched it again for this. I remembered it when it happened and then I watched it again and it's so bad that I'm almost impressed. Because I feel like it's. I mean, I think what happened in it, and for people who are listening to this, you should absolutely look this up. It actually comes up on YouTube as the Vines like meltdown on David Letterman. And I think right after the first chorus, he just falls to the ground with his guitar and knocks it so far out of tune that he can't recover. Like, and then for the rest of the song, he is playing completely out of tune and just has stopped even trying to sing in the melody of the song. And my favorite thing about it is watching the poor bass player who's trying so hard to keep it together. Right. He's just doing his backing vocals and trying really hard to like play the song. And oh man, it's amazing.
And I think I heard that one of the members quit literally after that performance. Like, it was the drummer or the bassist. One of them was just like, I'm done with this.
Yeah.
Like, this is embarrassing.
There's also a story that I heard. Apparently shortly after that, they were supposed to play on Leno's late night show and something happened in soundcheck where they did so much damage to the stage in soundcheck that they wouldn't let them on live.
Wow.
And they canceled it right before they went on.
I mean, this sounds like the formula, though. And I too, watched the performance today. And
yeah.
I felt like, okay, he's trying to be like Kurt Cobain. I remember, you know, the crazy Nirvana. What was the Nirvana performance where?
Top of Pops.
Oh, yeah, that one. But they also did an MTV performance. It might have... I forget exactly what it was. It was the one where Chris Novoselic throws his bass real high in the air. And, you know, it's one of those famous...
Oh, hits him in the head on the way
down. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, the thing about this band, when I want to start from the beginning with them a little bit, because I think their backstory is a little bit cool, as opposed to some of these other, I mean, namely the Strokes. I don't know if you guys know the story behind the Strokes, but basically they were... super wealthy kids who all met at the most expensive boarding school in Switzerland or something. And I give them credit because they did make cool music. They did end up making cool music, but they also had a leg up from the start in a lot of ways. The main way being super rich, but I also think that they had parents who were super connected and everything. So not the coolest backstory. The Vines, on the other hand, the backstory is that singer Craig Nichols met bassist Patrick Matthews while they were both working at McDonald's together, and they both liked Pavement, Beck, and Nirvana, so they decided to start a band together. I think that's a little bit cooler and more inspiring of a story than, you know, Silver Spoons type story. Like, so I liked that part of it, and we're talking about these crazy things. Apparently, Craig Nichols was a wild man. I read this story about him that some music journalist was spending time with him to write a story on him. And they went to a club and he got so excited, Craig Nichols, the singer of the Vines, got so excited that the DJ put on a Supergrass song that he doused himself with a bucket of water, got kicked out of the club, ran into traffic, jumped into a garbage can, and tried to scale a wall. and the journalist wrote that he did this all in like 60 seconds. So,
wow.
It kind of sounds in a way like the formula for, like, I don't know, the perfect wild man front man. I mean, isn't that what everybody loves? I watched the Letterman thing too, and I'm like, yeah, this sounds terrible, but like, I'm surprised that this didn't make their band way bigger, honestly. Yeah, it sounded terrible, but it didn't matter. It was, we're talking about it now. Granted, we're doing a podcast about it, but
on that YouTube video, it is still like a pretty legendary. I mean, you could certainly make the case that if you make that much of an impression, which they really did, there's no wrong way to do that. Yeah. And now looking back on it, if you did something like that intentionally on a show like that, that is incredibly brave and incredibly punk rock to go on a show of that caliber and just destroy the place. I don't know how much of it was just a coincidence and just them like being unexperienced enough or inexperienced enough to make these mistakes and not know how to correct on the fly.
Right.
But no, it is definitely, I clearly in the YouTube comments, you could see people are still talking about that to this day.
Right. And I wondered if it was an authentic meltdown or was it a Kurt Cobain impression?
Exactly. Yeah.
Is the question I ask. And I got to say, I'm sure you guys saw this too. I watched it to the end to see what David Letterman's reaction was. I mean, I grew up watching David Letterman every night. I loved Letterman and Conan growing up.
Yeah.
And you know, he's doing his laugh and he goes, "Is he all right, Paul? Could be the West Nile," which, you know, pretty of the time reference. But
supposedly, as they were leaving, Paul Schaefer said to the band to not quit their day jobs yet.
Wow.
To be fair, though, the other big thing is, like, I think the other problem is, yeah, that could be a star making performance, except for the fact that, I mean, I own it, and Highly Evolve is not that good of an album. Like, the Vines became a much better band the more folky their sound actually started to become. Like, their later album, songs like Ride, which was, like, a very big soundtrack song, like, I think the more that they got into, like, a psychedelic sound and less a grungy garage rock throwback sound, the better they were. But, like, this was the biggest moment in the sun for them, and it was like they didn't really have the album to back up the stage performances.
I didn't dig that far into them, but what I'll say about this is, once again, I couldn't have told you what songs the Vines sang before I did my research for this episode, but once I heard them, I'm like, yeah, okay, I know these songs. Actually, as I told Matt, like, the song we're talking about is called Get Free, but the song I recognized even more was a song called Ride that was used in all kind of things. I can't even tell you what things, just like commercials and movies and shows. Like, I feel like that song's still being used. And that's one thing I want to touch on, is this era of like bands that are supposed to sound like indie, but they're also like major label bands, you know, get used and just put in your ear every way, whether it's in a car commercial or a, you know, the background of a TV show, that it just sounds, even though it's supposed to sound grungy and rock, it sounds pretty corporate to me in a way. And I know that's strange of me to say, and it's not judging. I mean, to be honest, I like his vocal delivery. It's very aggressive, shouty, not completely what I expected it to be. It's pretty aggressive. I kind of dig it, you know?
Yeah, I was impressed when I went back and listened to this record, how eclectic it was. Mm-hmm. In my mind, it was like all of their stuff sounded like this very, you know, heavy Nirvana influence type, like grunge rock, garage rock thing.
Right.
And the album does touch on a lot of different stuff. It is more eclectic. I do think he has a good voice. It's very Kurt Cobain, which is, it's unclear to me how much that's him like putting it on, or if that was, like you said, maybe a label was really pushing him in that direction. Like, they heard that in his voice. They were like, you got to lean into that, which certainly is the sort of thing that could happen for someone's, you know, debut album.
You know, something, now, this guy is known as being hard to work with, you know, had bandmates come in and out. Last I've heard, he's the only remaining original member. Now, I know some people have come back in recent years. I don't know the ins and outs of who's in and out. Hard guy to work with, and obviously one of these crazy front men, which, once again, a lot of times that's a positive thing. Don't people love that?
isn't that a thing that people, you know, everybody from, when you look at, you know, the world of like the Warped Tour and stuff, you think of like Bert from The Used. Oh, he's so wild and crazy on stage. Or, you know, that's always been like a positive thing in a way for a rock band. But I don't know if you guys knew this, but he was later diagnosed with Asperger's.
Ah.
And then the guy who diagnosed him said that his life was pretty much a series of all the worst things you could do for someone with Asperger's.
Oh, man.
Being in different places every day, meeting new people, no structure in your life. And it was just, you know, when I read about that, I'm like, oh, he wasn't putting this on. You know, this was authentic. And that made me like the whole deal a lot more when I knew that it was an authentic thing and not someone trying to be outrageous, like as a plan, like, oh, we're going on Letterman tonight, we got to be outrageous, you know, watch some Nirvana videos from back in the day, watch some crazy frontmen that maybe, you know, this was a real thing.
That is really interesting. That does kind of give it some different context. I was going to say, I heard, and this is, I didn't know that, and this sort of jives. I don't know if this is true. This is a story I heard from a friend when I was in high school who went and saw them. I'm assuming it's true, but I don't know. But someone went and saw them and told me that they played, and towards the end of the first song, they like destroyed the set as if it was the end of the whole show. They finished the song and pulled, like, same as the end of the SNL, like pulled the drum kit apart, smashed guitars. And then once that was over, then like looked and were like, oh man, we got to like keep playing. And they had to leave the stage for like 20 minutes while the crew came and fixed everything.
Wow.
At the time I was like, that is like so bizarre. And I didn't know how to feel. I'm like, is that cool? Is that disrespectful to an audience? Is that just like dickish behavior? I don't know. But now hearing that, like Asperger's, that does actually, that would explain all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, first of
all, to a degree.
First of all, that story you just told, I think that's funny. Like, to destroy your instruments in the first song, to like just make a mess on stage in the first song is really funny. I mean,
that's some wild performance art, man. That's
right,
out there.
Right. I feel if it was because of the Asperger's, then I feel bad saying that's funny, but it's just, I think it's cool. You know, I think that's
funny.
Well,
I also feel like if this is early enough in their career where someone's seeing the Vine, so I'm assuming it's when Highly Evolved is out, like, if you listen to that record, almost every one of those songs ends like you could start breaking up your equipment at the end of each song. So yeah, it makes sense that like every song you've just got this high energy that you need to release.
Hey, yeah, Matt, how do you feel about breaking instruments?
You know, I have never done that in my entire life. And I feel like anybody who plays rock music, there's some little part of your brain that has that fantasy of like, wouldn't that be a cool thing to do? But another part of me, as I'm just a little too practical. I would feel too sad, even if it was something to throw away. I'm like, oh man, why am I breaking this thing? I could probably use it or sell it or something.
That's where I'm at with it, man. Is just that part of me. Yeah, believe me, everybody has that fantasy. I don't care if you play in a band or you're just pretending to in the mirror. Everyone has that fantasy if it's the end of the show and you're breaking the instruments. That's just like the ultimate rock and roll thing. But on the other hand, I don't know where I stand on this. It's like, I think to myself, oh, I broke this instrument. I could have gave that to a kid who couldn't afford a guitar or something. That's such a guilty thing to think about.
Totally.
Weirdly, like when people do the subversion of it, in the sense of like when we think about breaking instruments, we're obviously thinking about like smashing the guitars and basses on the ground or like throwing something through a bass drum. But that's why I think I have such an extra love for like Ben Folds, like just spearing the stool into the middle of the piano, or like I think Weird Al at a few shows has lit his accordion on fire a la Jimi Hendrix. Like that stuff, it's like, that's so over the because it's such like a not traditional rock and roll instrument to like smash up. Like that makes me extra happy when that happens.
You know what'd be the funniest idea ever, and I'm gonna try to get my band to do it now, is to just while you're playing your last song, hand off your real instruments and someone can continue playing and you get to smash like some fake instruments, maybe some
get
plastic
like children's
instruments.
Toys. Yeah. Buy like the children toy instruments and just smash them up on
smash
the stage.
Those. Yeah. That's a good idea. That's a good idea, Chris. Yeah. You guys should definitely do that.
I think I found the happy medium, you know?
That's it. Compromise.
Yeah. Something I thought was pretty interesting too that I read was, okay, Dave Grohl seems to be the nicest guy in rock and roll. Could you imagine him like being an asshole? I mean, I guess I can, but in general, doesn't he seem pretty cool pretty nice.
Yes.
So Dave Grohl in Spin Magazine in 2003 said that Avril Lavigne's Skater Boy was more challenging of a song than Get Free. That like, and I don't know why or what spawned that comment.
So for what it's worth, Wheatus did a thing a couple of years ago where we did covers in studio as requests.
Right.
We have a Patreon and we let people make requests of stuff they wanted us to cover. And one of the songs that won was Skater Boy.
Yeah.
And honestly, surprisingly challenging.
Yeah, right?
It has a lot of weird chord changes and stuff, and it moves in a strange way. I don't know. It's got a key change that I didn't even catch.
Right.
I would say it is definitely harder to play than Get Free. I don't know if that makes it a better song. But
no, right. It's definitely
more challenging.
The one thing that Get Free does have, which I never even noticed until I was doing the research on this, was that it doesn't really follow a traditional song structure in a normal way. Instead of like verse, chorus, verse, it's like verse, chorus, guitar solo, return to verse, cut to bridge, back to first verse, into chorus. But it's also like the first verse and the chorus are basically just one extended chorus. Like it's a very weird song, but I feel like it's not like a, hey, we know how to write a song, so let's like be subversive with how we're writing it. I think it's like we don't know what we're doing and we're just like going with what feels like it's the coolest thing to do at that moment. And I think that that's a positive for Get Free, is that it has that like raw, just like throwing shit and seeing what happens energy to it.
You touched on a good word there, Matt, is that it sounds cool. Like,
yeah.
There's something about their style that does, it sounds cool. It sounds hip. It sounds, you know, the tones they're using, the way it sounds, which, you know, put them right. That's why they're lumped, minus having the name with S at the end. But how they got lumped in with the Strokes and the Hives and White Stripes and that style, it does sound cool. And maybe, honestly, that makes me think, now that you say that, Matt, about covering it, Maybe Dave Grohl wasn't talking shit. Maybe he was just complimenting Skater Boy.
I would say maybe. Yeah.
We need to know the context of that question.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, was it like, what's your thoughts on the Vines or what's your thoughts on Avril Lavigne?
Well, like, you know, what I assumed was that, oh, the Vines are like a Nirvana ripoff. And Dave Grohl was like, oh, what the hell is this? And was talking shit, but maybe he wasn't. But that same year, Rolling Stone wrote in his article that spending time with Craig Nichols, the singer of the Vines, makes him feel like he's babysitting his 3-year-old nephew.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so, I mean, once again, we're not holding it against him if, you know, he has challenges that the rest of us don't, you know?
Sure, but to a
certain extent, yes, but at the same time, like, maybe on top of that, maybe he was an asshole, too, you know? Like, just, you can't rule that out of the picture. But you got to give him some leeway if he's struggling with something that maybe we don't, or has challenges that we don't. I don't, you know, I'm trying to word that the right way. You guys know what I mean.
No, though. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I do know what you mean. Yeah, of course.
Right.
Of course.
So they had their moment. I guess Get Free was the peak of that. Matt, how big of a song actually was that? I'm surprised that song Ride wasn't bigger.
Not particularly.
So you're telling me this was the one.
It's complicated because it's all about, again, the Billboard charts are so fucking hard to like translate sometimes. So Get Free was like, I think it reached like number 2 or 3 on the modern rock charts at the time, or on the alternative charts.
Yeah.
Ride only got to like 19 on the alternative charts, but then on the modern rock charts, which I don't understand what the difference is between alternative and modern rock at this point, but on the modern rock charts, Get Free is the only song that was ever big enough on the alternative charts to make a boost into like the actual mainstream rock station charts. Mm-hmm. So I think that like, Ride was that song that's perfect for like a Zach Braff movie. You know what I mean? Like they're like, this is the perfect song for the background of this scene. Whereas like you look at the movies that Get Free appears in and it's like Agent Cody Banks and School for Scoundrels, like these like movies where you need that like crazy high energy song. And I just think that by the time like these songs are coming out, like at the time that the Vines are making music, we're not needing that like that aggressive grungy sound in our soundtracks as much. Like we're moving more towards like the indie films or like the dramedy type movies where it's like you're going to go with a song like Ride when you're putting together a soundtrack for most movies over Get Free. Like, to the point that if someone was to use Get Free in a movie in 2022, I would assume it was for a very ironic, supposed to be funny usage of the song. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's like, man, something really cool is happening right now.
Yeah, or you're just trying to date your scene as being taking place in the early 2000s.
Exactly.
The overall sound of this band from the songs that I know really do, in a way, fit in that mold of what I would call Scott Pilgrim music, which I absolutely love that movie. I would say it's like probably top 20 favorite movies. I'm just, every time I watch it, I enjoy it. I think the music's amazing. And yeah, Beck was behind a lot of that and everything, which makes sense. But the Vines sort of fit in there. And what's funny is I was watching Vine's music videos. And did you guys happen to see the music video for the song Gimme Love?
No.
It looks exactly like Scott Pilgrim. Like, I don't know what came first, whether that movie came first or if the video came first, but one or the other ripped the other off. Because it is, when you watch it, you'll be like, oh, this is Scott Pilgrim, to the point where I was like, was this on the soundtrack? And then but I couldn't find anything about that. It's like, exactly Scott Pilgrim, you know, all the things that happen while they're playing, like the animated effects that come out, the 8-bit graphics that come up on the screen, just everything about it. It looks like Scott Pilgrim, which, you know.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
How's the song?
I thought the song was pretty cool. That's the thing about this band, man, is like, I don't see myself putting them on and listening to them for some reason. But at the same time, I put it on, I'm like, yeah, this is pretty good. Like, and they had some cool music videos, and I do like his vocal delivery. I think it's cool.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life. And then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.
By now, I'm sure you've at least heard about Factor, but if you haven't tried it yet, let me tell you, as a guy who loves it, now is the time. Enjoy stress-free dining this spring with Factor's chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals that are ready in just 2 minutes. With 35 weekly options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie, plus over 60 add-ons, you'll stay fueled and feel fantastic all day long. Don't wait. Fuel up for your spring goals today with Factor. Factor offers you chef-prepared meals ready in just 2 minutes, so you can spend more time doing what you love this spring. Indulge in gourmet options like filet mignon, shrimp, and fresh veggies without the hassle of prep or cleanup. Customize your weekly meals to fit your schedule perfectly and enjoy the convenience of Factor's no-fuss, no-mess approach. Plus, you can celebrate Earth Day all month long with Factor's low-carbon footprint options. Factor is your go-to solution for fast, premium meals, eliminating the need for cooking and empowering you to savor every moment. So head to factormeals.com/onehit50 and use the code onehit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code onehit50, the words one hit and the number 50, at factormeals.com/onehit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Ah.
the smell of the video store. I love this place.
Do you remember when you could just look at the walls of covers?
We had to choose just by looking at the cover and reading the crappy synopsis.
It was, you were leaving with one.
And the only way to know what new movies were coming out is you actually had to watch the trailers instead of skipping them.
Right, we didn't have the internet to look it up. We had one guy named Todd behind the counter that would tell us what was good or not.
And Todd strangely liked way too many romantic comedies.
Yes, but you always knew when the boobies were coming because Todd made sure.
Oh, and remember all the awful CG we had to put up with in the mid-90s?
We talk about that a lot, don't we?
Join us on Analog Jones and the Temple of Film, where we talk about VHS tapes.
And we wax nostalgia like none other.
I thought to myself when I was like revisiting some of this material that it was, I don't know if, have you guys done Jet on this show?
No, but it, yeah, that's another band right in this wheelhouse.
Jet, I think, weirdly had more songs that cracked into the mainstream than you remember.
They very well might have, but I was going to say that to me, this, when I cycled through a few of their tracks, I was like, they remind me more of Jet type of thing than I would have realized, but I prefer them to anything I ever heard by Jet.
Yeah, Jet's another one. All I can think of is Are You Gonna Be My Girl? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
I know they probably had some other songs, just like with the Vines, where I'd be like, oh yeah, I know that song. It's been in the background of this Volkswagen commercial or something.
Yeah.
Once again, what that sound is, like what makes me not want to listen to it is that, yeah, it just sounds like someone with a lot of money behind them trying to sound like they don't have a lot of money behind them. And that's me being judgy, but hey, that's what this podcast is all about. I can't help it sometimes, you know? It's just
I totally get it. I also think it's interesting because, like, so this, we're you know, comparing them to a band like The Strokes, who I think sounded really slick in a way that the Vines do not, but the Vines also don't sound quite as raw as a band like the White Stripes, who were out at the same time. Those guys were like, you know, I'm still a major label band, but when the White Stripes present themselves as this really raw, like, you know, modern rock band, like, I buy it. Yeah, I don't buy it with the Vines in the same way.
And that's, I think the thing that worked with something like the White Stripes specifically as the example is, like, you know, you have Meg White, who has a very, like, I'm not going to sit here and be like the people who jump on her as like being the worst drummer in the world. She is the perfect drummer for what the White Stripes is. And I think that that's what made it feel so raw. Is it's like, I think in 2021, it's another one of those examples of like the ebbs and flows. What made me like the band so much at that time was that it did feel like a return to like what grunge had done to hair metal, where like everything was too glossy and too like hyper produced, and then like in came this music that felt like it didn't have a lot of extra layers on it, even if they were working with like some of the biggest producers. Mm-hmm. And like you think about like the music of like the late 90s, where it is starting to like get back, like the pop music is coming back, you're having the boy bands on TRL and stuff like that. So to have something that, again, like the White Stripes and the Vines, feels like those recordings could have just been like they put a microphone in their bedroom, hit record, and just played, like, kind of was like, oh yeah, like we're getting back to just like this cool, just straight raw rock and roll again.
Absolutely. Yeah,
you touched right on it, Matt. This is absolutely true. I've read about this, I've heard about this on podcasts, that era of the late 90s where it was nu metal and boy bands is what was popular, that these publications, Rolling Stone, Spin, NME, any of the big rock publications had to write about that music and they hated it. So it's almost like they welcomed this music, the Vines, the Strokes especially, White Stripes, with open arms. They were like, oh, this is refreshing. But they felt it was so refreshing compared to what was being forced down everybody's throat. But in actuality, it was kind of just sounded like stuff that had already been done. It wasn't like super original. And
no,
you've talked about 9/11 before too, and I've heard 9/11.
That's what I was going to say. This is also a post 9/11 world where it's like you want something that feels like it's in pieces and no structure, because like our lives in late 2021, early 2022 felt like it had no direction and no structure.
2001, 2002. Is that what I think you meant?
Yeah, that's what, whatever. Yeah, that's what I meant.
That's what I think you meant.
Whatever.
Not last year and this
close
year.
Enough.
But close enough. But also, I mean, this is kind of more referring to the Strokes, but also read about this. Once again, the Strokes, I do think they backed it up musically. I like the Strokes. I think their music is good. I think their music is good. But not only did they have all the money and all the connections in the world, but they also were embraced by the journalists and things because they were a New York City band. And New York City, just this pride in New York City and the music coming out of it. And they were the poster boys of that. And if these other the bands, even though they were from Australia or Sweden, wherever these bands were from, they were still the similar sound, and maybe they benefited from that too, possibly.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I never would have thought of it that way, that like journalists arguably like kind of put their finger on the scale a little bit there and invited this movement to happen. Because I also was thinking these bands really hit their ultimate hype point right when I was like exiting high school and going into college. So I was really involved in that world at that time, and I was super into it all. But it feels, I don't know if like, has there been a movement like that since? Has anyone experienced this like return of the rock mentality since this like early 2000s? I don't remember it happen. I mean, there's always ebb and flow to it, but like this really felt like they were trying to hype it hugely.
Right now, I think kind of. Not necessarily the return of rock and roll, but like there's definitely this big push of like the biggest pop stars in the world are doing more like punk rock, pop punk sounds, which has been getting a lot of attention because they're all collaborating with Travis.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I think that what I always see is just any style of music. I saw it in the world that I'm involved in is you heard the bands that were pretty raw. Like I could think of like raw, but really well produced, but still like great sounds. Like think of like Rancid and Out Come the Wolves. Like that album, it's produced amazing, but still like sounds real, right?
Yeah.
But so that's like whatever, 95 or something like that. And then you, in that world of punk rock, by 10 years later, the world of punk rock has gotten to a point where things are so produced. Things are so crazy produced that bands can't even pull it off live. And I think that you know, every style of music will go through that until it gets so produced that people are like, this doesn't even sound real. And then it comes crashing down. Then you need a band like Nirvana is the perfect example because you had all the overproduced whatever hair metal and whatever of the 80s. And I don't know. I don't know where we stand with that. I don't think that that's happened again yet.
No, not on the level of, you know, where music magazines are like, this is it. This is the return of this sound. But I do feel like I've seen a little bit of that between like Olivia Rodrigo's album and like what Machine Gun Kelly's been up to. And then all of the other SoundCloud rappers like Machine Gun Kelly that are also like doing their own version of a Blink-182 record out of nowhere. Like there was a vibe last summer that it was like, it was the return of the pop punk sound of 2001 in 2021.
Yeah, but it's being like adopted by the pop world, which is so interesting. Cause it's like, I don't think anybody really would consider Machine Gun Kelly like a rock artist.
No.
Even if he makes a record straight in that world. Same for Olivia Rodrigo or any of these people. Like they're grabbing elements of it, but they're just bringing it into, you know, pop radio land, as opposed to being like a band and that entire, you know, everything that gets wrapped up in being a band.
I guess Rolling Stone and Spin aren't a good example anymore because they're more just online. Like I see articles come up on Facebook and I click on them and then it's like, oh, you got to subscribe to read this article. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, I'm not going to read that article then, which is maybe rude of me. But at the same time, like what makes these publications decide which artists to write about? I mean, sometimes an artist is so undeniably amazing that you're like, we got to write about this. This is groundbreaking. This is amazing. But a lot of times I'm like, why are they making a big deal about this particular band who, I don't know, there's a lot of bands that are just as good as this band. Why are you picking this band to really focus on? I have some examples in my head. I don't want to trash bands and artists, you know, especially ones that are like in my world, but I'm just saying that like, what makes them decide? Is it someone got paid to do it? Is it like, I don't understand.
In some cases it is somebody got paid. And I think also it's interesting that like we were talking about, like, so the vines, like say 2002, right? This 2002, 2003 time. Yeah. I think it was easier for a publication to break an artist because people at that point still were pretty reliant on radio and MTV and TRL and all of these types of things that were happening at that. Like that all still was in place. And now they don't have as much sway with it. Like they can't push. So they're going the opposite direction and they're chasing clicks. They're right. trying to write about the things that are going to yield the clicks, and either they're going to generate them through, if people pay them, they'll try, but otherwise they're trying to get you to click on stuff based on writing about people who people want to read about.
I think that's fair. I want to propose a question, part of one of the new segments that we've added to the show, but I was thinking about it with this particular song. Who in 2022 would you want to hear cover Get Free by the Vines?
Wow.
I mean, nobody. I don't know. I think the song's pretty good, but that's kind of a hard question. It's so specific of a sound.
So I was thinking about that because I'm like, all right, obviously, like, the last time we proposed this question, it was for Lucas with a lid off, and, you know, I went with BTS. But, like, I'm thinking, like, what is happening on rock radio? Like, what are some of the bands that are currently doing all right on rock radio that I think would get that raw, chaotic sound down? And I kind of landed on Royal Blood, if either of you have ever heard the band Royal Blood.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they're just a drummer and a dude who's got a bass that's like built to get guitar tones out of it. And I think just the two of them could make a really cool version of Get Free.
I can see that. The other, I was just thinking of someone like that in the pop world, like with Travis Barker, like you were referencing, like it would be a pretty cool thing to hear someone like Willow Smith do.
Yeah. That's exactly who I was going to say. It's like,
I could see her like channeling. I would like to hear a lady sing this song. I think that would be cool in a very different way.
Right.
So that would, that'd be my vote.
I don't want to hear just someone do this song exactly how it was done. Hearing a woman sing this would be cool. And okay, since you brought her up, we got to talk about this for a second. Speaking of Willow Smith, and we'll pivot to Will Smith. Did you know they're making a dramatic reimagination of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
No.
Dude.
No.
Dude.
Seriously?
The trailer just came out today. Like, literally 10 minutes before we were about to start recording this, I'm sending it to all my friends. It's trending everywhere. You'll obviously see it when you get off here. It is like a serious, dramatic reimagination. Like, there's scenes of, like, it's all new actors. It's Riverdale.
They Riverdaled Fresh Prince, basically.
I can see why you're saying Riverdale, but it's like, the scenes of when Will Smith's getting beat up back in Philadelphia playing basketball, it's like someone pulling a gun out. You know, there's
cops
guns.
Guns
involved.
Everybody.
And like, it's very serious. Uncle Phil looks very serious in this role. And Carlton is not doing his dance. He's much more serious. I mean, you got to watch it. Matt said, who asked for this? I said, it's a good question, but I'm definitely going to watch it. I am most definitely going to watch it. But
it's so fascinating. So it's going to be a series again?
Yeah, on Peacock.
Yeah, who asked for it is a really good question. I don't know. I mean, I guess I can sort of see the merit of, like, Will Smith arrives and they're like, look, this is a serious situation, guys.
Yeah,
like,
that's what it is.
Trouble. You are a troubled youth.
That's what it is. Like, you got it on the nose. You're not off. This is what it is. It's like, you know, he came out of here for a reason. And, you know, basically Uncle Phil's like, well, if he's not going to play by the rules, then he doesn't belong, you know, which I guess the original Uncle Phil was kind of that way, but it was a comedy for the most part.
Feels like an SNL sketch.
This is kind of like if, I don't know, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was Friday Night Lights or something. It's like serious stuff. Anyway, back to the vines here.
Matt, did you, you know, you said you picked this because you wanted to pick a song you didn't like. And I know that there's a particular artist that you and I have a mutual admiration for. The fact that Weird Al briefly covered it in the Angry White Boy polka, did that come into play at all?
it did make an appearance in a Weird Al polka, which is, they should be, I hope that they are sufficiently proud of themselves, because that is a huge, huge accomplishment. No, and the other thing is, I didn't like it when it came out. I probably like it more now. When I listen back to it after not hearing it for a really long time, I probably enjoy it more now. And when I think back to it, I realize that, like, it is very Nirvana. I mean, again, it's all anybody was saying at the time, which I think was probably one of the things that turned me off, was like, I don't need to hear someone doing their impression of Nirvana. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not super interesting to me. And I think all of those other bands that we keep referencing from that time period all sounded, I mean, they clearly had reference, like throwback references, they all did, but none of them so on the nose as this.
Right.
Where now it's like, you know, this feels like the equivalent to me of the, you know, Greta Van Fleet, Led Zeppelin comparisons, where it's like, yes, you know, what are you doing here, guys? Like, you're basically cosplaying as another band.
At least the Vines admit it. They liked Nirvana. Like, the amount of times that Greta Van Fleet's like, we've never heard Led Zeppelin. It's like, how is that possible?
Is that for real? Is that a real thing?
They have said that. I didn't even mind their Led Zeppelin thing until I heard them say that they were not familiar with Led. I was like, come on, guys. Like, you can't, like, you've not heard Led Zeppelin. Like, there's just no way.
Like, I'm not familiar with these Beatles that you speak of.
Exactly. Like, now listening to Get Free, I actually think it's a pretty cool. It's so short. Like, it really kind of gets the point across really fast. I love, you referenced, like, my favorite thing about the song is that really short bridge that it goes to. It's like a 4-bar bridge where the whole song kind of opens up and changes the vibe, which I really, really dig. Yeah. And I mean, very quickly glancing through, I was impressed. They have a lot of records at this point. And just like kind of passing through them, I have not kept up with them, that's for sure. But they sound not bad at all. And like, they're kind of just, I respect any band that's like, you know, plugging away and doing their thing and, you know, just kind of continuing to try to make it work, which it seems like they have done. Still in Australia now. They're just kind of like an Australia band. I don't think they tour too much anymore, but he keeps making records.
Hey, I respect that. I mean, yeah. Did the Vines bring the one hit thunder, or are they a one hit blunder, is the question. And it's a tough one this week.
This is a tough one. Yeah, this is a tough one.
What do you think, Matt Kelly? Start it out.
I'll start us off with a thunder. I'll say a thunder. I mean, I think that Highly Evolved, I bought maybe 3 or 4 of their albums because, I was really into the band thing. I was going to buy any record that any of them put out for a while. As they matured, they got better. I think Highly Evolved is probably the worst of the 3 albums that I own by them, but they still have good songs on them. Get Free, I do think, is a fun song. The follow-up single to this, Out of the Way, I remember really, really liking when that song came out. So I think that they're interesting. And you know what? I've watched that David Letterman performance more than most bands I adore's live performances, so that's got to count for something, too.
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Matthew Milligan, what's your vote here?
I think I'm leaning the same way, even though I didn't like it at the time that it came out. I do think that they were part of a interesting time, and I think that at that point, those bands making records like this was a really interesting musical moment that, to be honest, maybe this is just my age coming into play, but I do miss like the fact that I missed that time where it felt like there was space in pop music for this type of rock.
Right.
Like, or space on the radio, space in like just the collective pop culture consciousness for this type of music. And now it's not there anymore. So I like the fact that they were around for it. I like that they're, you know, still plugging away and doing their thing. So yeah, I'm leaning towards Thunder, which I honestly, even when I said I wanted to pick this song, I didn't think I was going to go that way. But
well, it's already going to be majority for Thunder anyway. But I would also give him a Thunder for a few reasons. Number one, I think the music's pretty good. Same as you. I didn't really like it at the time. But now I look back, I'm like, oh, this is pretty good. And it is cool that this was what was popular instead of, like, I don't know, a bro country song. A song about Applebee's or something.
Yeah,
like,
a song about going to Applebee's. Yeah. I'll take Get Free on the radio right now over that fucking Applebee's song.
I mean, absolutely. Yeah,
right. So that part of it. Another part of it that when I did my research on this, kind of pisses me off is, so NME says they're the best band since Nirvana, but then later apologize for saying that. So you said that, then you didn't like what the Vines did, and then, or didn't like them personally, and then said, no, we didn't mean that. Like, what kind, that's the same kind of thing as like Pitchfork going back and changing albums that they gave a bad review, then later giving a good review because, oh, people like these now. So what kind of journalism is that? That's just terrible. That's terrible journalism. And also, I'm basing this off stuff I'm reading on the internet, but yeah. I believe it's true that singer and guitarist Craig Nichols had some things he had to deal with that a lot of us don't have to deal with. And if that contributed to some of his actions or the way he was perceived by people, I think it's a little unfair of us to, you know, crucify him for that. And also, I think it's cool that him and whoever from definitely him and whoever else can tolerate being around him and making music is still making music. And that's always a big blunder for me, is when someone achieves a certain level that they can just make music and then they just quit. That makes me, that's an instant blunder to me, you know, but yeah. I super respect when people just like realize what they have, you know. I feel like you and I, Matt, we realize that in our musical careers that there are people that care. So that's a motivating factor to want to keep making music. And I think that's what the Vines have done, at least Craig Nichols of the Vines. And I respect him for that. Thunder for me, the Vines. Yeah.
I also think just one, because I only just thought of this, it's interesting to think, you know, maybe a part of why they have existed on a lower profile might be due to his, you know, mental health concerns. And I do know, I did see something about him staying off the road was a big deal. Like being on tour was hard for him.
Right.
So maybe the low profile, like we're going to release records, and I think they play a couple shows occasionally, but not a lot. And maybe that's just a mature, like responsible way to take care of himself while still making his music, which I, again, respect tremendously.
It's like doing it for the right reasons.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Matthew, is there anywhere, if people want to check out the stuff that you're doing, are you doing anything cool right around now?
Yes. Thank you for asking. At the time you're listening to this, Wheatus should actually have a new pair of songs up on Spotify and all the streaming services. So you can check those out. Also, I am in Los Angeles doing a residency of shows with Mike Doty, who you might know formerly of the band Soul Coughing. He's got a new project, and we're doing very, very musically adventurous, weirdo, improv, rock and roll, funk, jazz, hybrid, all over the place shows. And they're free at a place in LA called Harvard and Stone, and we're doing them every Friday in January and February. So if you are around and you are vaccinated and have your mask, then come see us play.
Hell yeah. Nice.
Yeah. 8 o'clock on Fridays at Harvard and Stone.
Nice.
You know I don't like sports, so why are you playing these games with my head? You act like I'm not hurt, so explain to me why I'm sitting the bed.
This has been One Hit Thunder. One Hit Thunder is hosted by Chris Ophalios of the bands Punchline, Pack, and Another Cheetah, and produced by Matt Kelly of Geekscape.net. Underneath me, you're hearing I Don't Know off the Punchline album Major Motion Picture. Visit punchline.com for information on future shows, releases, and merchandise. Also, we're on Patreon now. Visit us at patreon.com/OHTpodcast for bonus material, early access to episodes, and a chance to help decide what songs we'll discuss in the future. Do you want to hear your song as the closing song one day? Or do you have an interest in sponsoring an episode? Contact me at matt@geekscape.net for our rates. If you have any interest in podcasting, visit weknowpodcasting.com for how Matt and Chris can make your show sound as professional as possible. And let us know your thoughts on the show by emailing us at onehitthunderpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting app. And tune in next week for another episode of One Hit Thunder.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you'd cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freites from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective. The only podcast you crank up to 11.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like The Lumineers, Andy DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Mo, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon. Again.